Welcome to the Maneuver Meta, where I, and sometimes Paul, discuss the evolving meta in Flames of War version 4 Late War. I'm Lexi, and I've been playing Flames of War on and off for around 11 years. While I've played on and off, I've continually collected a large German, American, and Soviet armies. At the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, I dragged my roommate Paul kicking and screaming into the Flames of War community. So let's declare our stance to maneuver and ready our reserves. Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Maneuver Meta. Today we are taking you through the additions to Lessons from the Front, which dropped this morning for those of us in America, and at other parts of the day for those of us in other parts of the country. So we're going to jump right into it with the first addition to Lessons from the Front here, starting with the command portion. Can my formation commander give command leadership rerolls if he is in a transport? Yes, whether a formation commander is in a transport or not has no effect. Good cut and dry.
The second one is if a team is out of command, if it moves, it suffers a +1 penalty on its rolls to hit when shooting. Does this +1 penalty apply to assaults as well? The answer is no. The penalty for being out of command only applies to shooting.
What happens if my formation does not have a formation commander? If your formation lacks a formation commander, whether because, like a Soviet mixed tank battalion, it can't have one, or the formation commander has been destroyed, it continues to fight on. It no longer benefits from command leadership rerolls, but is otherwise unaffected. Again, a relatively simple one.
Okay. Then, on to moving. This one is, I pass a blitz movement order and move 4 inches, then I move at tactical speed. Do I suffer the +1 to hit penalty? Straight up, no. The +1 hit penalty only occurs if you fail a blitz movement order, in which case it applies to your shooting, whether you move or not.
On to our next one, as I bring myself down here, jumps right into the transport section. My formation HQ doesn't have transports, but my infantry units do. Can the infantry teams of my formation HQ ride in the infantry units transports? Yes, they can. If there is enough space in the transports, the formation HQ can squeeze in with the infantry units. So again, relatively simple.
Yep. Then into concealment. Does a team need to be fully in or behind short terrain to be concealed? Is a team half behind tall terrain concealed? Unlike with buildings and hills, teams must be entirely within or behind short or tall terrain to be concealed.
This was my first one of, oh, thank the gods, they finally said it. The amount of Facebook conversations, arguments, instances, and tournament rulings where the lacking of this exact terminology being present made it that arguments were able to be had. You know, and that's how we've been playing it now for the past, probably, 6 or 7 months, when we really dug into it, where hills and buildings are the only ones that use the 50% rule. Everything else is an all or nothing.
Right.
I didn't know about the hills and buildings, but I knew everything else was an all or nothing, because that was a simplification that shifted over. But I am very glad that they finally added that bit in. On to our next one. Does a team need to be fully in or behind smoke to gain the +1 to hit penalty when shot at? Teams must be entirely within or behind smoke to gain its protection. So what this does is it makes it so that if you are sticking out slightly, you do not get the penalty. Or the penalty is not applied to that target, which is... I guess it makes sense because it's in line with the fact that smoke is neither a building nor a hill, so it's going to classify, fall into the all-or-nothing category.
Right.
With the short or tall terrain.
At that point, you could call smoke area terrain.
Yeah, and so you need to be fully behind it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of smoke, does smoke provide concealment? No, smoke has its own effect separate from concealment, which is only provided by terrain.
Another good clarification. I cannot remember how those arguments always came up, but I always remembered people assuming smoke gave concealment. I can't remember if that's a leftover from V3 or what. But on to our next bit here, going into the line of sight portion. For a tank team, line of sight is drawn from the weapon mount. What if I'm firing an MG that has no obvious weapon mount on the model? In that case, draw the line of sight from the tank's main gun.
Off to the next one. What if the tank team has multiple MG mountings, such as a tank with a coaxial MG beside the main gun in the turret and a bow gun on the front of the hull? You just choose one of the weapon mountings and use that.
That's interesting. You know, that can get some, won't be that obnoxious, but that'll definitely be something that might impact one portion of a game, which I think if most people were playing relatively historically, they were already doing this because they know the layout of the tank and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, otherwise you now just, pick a weapon mounting and all of your MGs fire from that weapon mounting.
Right.
Which might be a little weird. On to our next one, rotating into rotate to face. How does this work when firing MG weapons on tank teams? Okay, well, backing up because it's a secondary question to this one of do all teams need to rotate to face? What about infantry teams that have an all-around field of fire? And so then the part two of that question is how does this work when firing MG weapons on tank teams? Do not rotate the team to face if the only weapon firing is a self-defense AA weapon, or the tank does not have a turret, but the weapon is not forward firing. Otherwise, rotate the turret or team like a normal turreted or forward firing team. That one's a little wonky. I don't really see it doing that much, because again, kind of similar to the MG mounts, I feel like most people that were doing it were already playing it like that.
Yeah. Just another rules clarification. And then on to danger close. The only one that we have here is do aircraft prevent other aircraft from firing at targets near them? The answer is no. Aircraft can shoot at targets within the danger close range of aircraft from their own unit.
That one always made me cackle because rules as written, you could not target anything with aircraft because it didn't specify that they checked themselves for danger close.
Oh.
On to our next one, which is going all the way into wrecks. This one is interesting. When multiple armored tank teams get destroyed in a small area, the resulting area of wreckage can make it difficult to position teams to launch assaults, hold objectives, or to repel attacks. How do I handle this? The best way to handle this is to move aside or remove a wreck to make space for your team. When your team moves away, place the wreck back where it came from. You can mark the position of the wreck by a base roughly the size of the wreck or token. So my first interpretation with this is, why bother when you can just put your models on top of the tanks now? You know, if you're just able to move through it, there's no need to really be picking up and down models and everything, because if you're literally just removing them, doing almost like a chalk outline of the vehicle, removing the infantry team or anything else, there's... effectively, it's the exact same thing as stopping on top of them.
Yeah, I can see your point where it's more steps than are necessary, but then again, some people could get squirrely about putting models on top of their models.
Well, remember, actually, I'm not sure if this was a local rule or if this is an actual rule, but you cannot place models on top of wrecks.
That's right.
That was one of the things. Yeah, I can't remember if that's local to us, to our area, or if that's in the main rules, but... that's kind of why I was surprised with this, because even at Adepticon, I had that cited against me, that I could not put models on top of destroyed wrecks, or on top of wrecks. I could not put a team on top of a wreck. So granted, that was Team Yankee, but so much of it is similar that I just applied that to both games.
It's bound to bleed through every now and then. So then we go into ranging in. I successfully ranged in with an artillery battery on the first attempt. I then used the same spotting team to attempt to range in a second artillery battery, succeeding straight away. What are the to-hit penalties for these bombardments? This one's a little bit more tricky. The first batter was ranged in on the spotting team's first attempt, so it has no penalty. The second battery was ranged in on the spotting team's second attempt, so suffers the usual plus one to hit penalty for ranging in on the second attempt. I found it was easier to think of the spotting team as having the attempts and not the shooting team.
Yeah, that's something that you and I have been playing this entire time. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is definitely just a quality of life addition.
Yep.
So, this next bit is...
This one looks like another twofer.
Yeah, twofer. So I have an artillery bombardment that is firing a repeat bombardment. I also have another artillery battery that I want to range in on a new target. Can I use the same team at the can I use the same team as the spotting team for both bombardments? Yes, you can. However, although the repeat bombardment automatically ranges in on the first attempt, it still counts as the spotting team's first attempt. First range in attempt. You can then use the spotting team's second and third, if necessary, attempt to range in the other teams. And now this part is the clarification that I was actually talking to you about earlier today. Mm-hmm. Can I do it the other way around with the spotting team ranging in the new artillery bombardment first? No, you must use the first attempt for ranging in the repeat bombardment. Because that was something that was kind of a slightly really understanding the rules higher play kind of thing prior to this addition to the lessons from the front. Because mm-hmm. you would specifically save the last range in attempt for your spotting teams, because prior to this it didn't matter. Right. You know, you just had to have a spotter. But now, almost akin to smoke, there's a specific time you have to fire your repeat bombardments when using a spotter now. Which, in my opinion, this turns into a light buff for Americans, because it makes observers all the more important. Because you're actually having to sequence it properly. It's not just, hey, this bloke can see it, so we're going to try two attempts to bring in another battery and then repeat on the third. No, you're already going to be starting at your second attempt, no matter what.
So even if you do get it on the first roll, it's still going to be the plus one, yep. And then so on.
Yep, because it's counting as the second.
Mm-hmm. And then going a little bit further into it, my spotting team is ranging in two repeat bombardments, then attempting to range in a third artillery battery. How does this work? Each time they range in uses up one of their attempts, so they'd use the first two attempts ranging in the repeat bombardments, remembering that both repeat bombardments will count as having ranged in on their first attempt, so they'll have no penalty when rolling to hit, leaving their third attempt to try to range in from the third artillery battery with a plus two to hit if they succeed. So you can kind of stack your repeat bombardments, but it's going to take up your first attempts.
Yeah, you're able to stack them. It doesn't really matter for the repeat bombardments because you're suffering no hit penalties for it, but it makes it so that, because I did this to you a couple of times actually with my Americans, because that's who I run the most artillery with.
Mm-hmm.
I would attempt to range in one of the batteries. Mm-hmm. If I failed, I would just immediately shift to the two repeat bombardments.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to repeat, and then if I succeed, I'm on plus two to hit.
Right. Because
it has to be the last one. So that's an interesting minor tweak that I don't think was explicitly present in the rules. So a very mild buff to American forces because of their infantry observer rules,
mm-hmm.
on how many observers they can fit into an army, so this won't impact them as much. So our next bit is the meat and potatoes of this FAQ and what has been the hot topic on forums and the Facebook page today.
Mm.
I want to assault an enemy team behind a hedge or wrecked tank. How close to the enemy team do I need to be to launch the assault? Now, this answers multiple parts. There's no set distance for this. You must be able to move into contact with the enemy team by moving 4 inches or less. If there is nothing between your assaulting team and the team being charged, then your assaulting team would need to be within 4 inches of the enemy team to charge to contact. That's normal rules. But now there's this addition. In the case where there is an obstacle physically preventing your assaulting teams from actually touching the enemy team, then your assaulting teams would only need to be within 4 inches of the obstacle. since after moving 4 inches while charging into contact, it would be in contact with, parentheses, as close as it can physically get to, the enemy team. So the big problem with this is, what qualifies as an obstacle? The immediate thing that me and some others in the community were noticing was if you have a 6-inch line of terrain, and like, say, a stone wall or a fence or a hedge or something, mm-hmm. and on the furthest rightmost side, you have an infantry team. An interpretation of these rules is if you are 4 inches away from the leftmost side of that terrain piece, making it so that you are minimum 6 inches apart when you're touching it, you are able to complete that charge to contact because now you're as close as possible. Because with this ruling, you measure to the obstacle, not the infantry team. So Phil got me an answer back on Facebook where he said that it was a sensible interpretation of as close as possible. If you can make a movement that would bring you closer, you are not in contact, which I'm not entirely sure how I'm feeling on that, because if you are 6 inches away where you're a 4-inch charge into a 2-inch obstacle with an infantry team on the other side, you still have 2 inches of movement that could bring you closer to contact. So then in that case, by that explanation, you're not able to complete the charge.
Yeah.
Because turning you finish it, you then still have, you still would be able to move closer to it. Right. So the interpretation that, or I shouldn't say the interpretation, so many problems are coming out of the woodwork for this. For, again, with, I forgot to lead with this 4-point. We play competitively. We play rules as written. So we definitely do get janky with our interpretations and our rulings, because if it's open-ended, that interpretation will usually be played to an advantage to be able to do something that you normally wouldn't, i.e., making a charge on a team that's 8 inches away because you're able to contact the fence that they're touching even though they're 6 inches away from you on the fence. So the way that I'm going to be playing this in tournaments that I run and that I judge on is I'm just doing a flat blanket rule. And I hate doing this, and Paul knows firsthand how much I hate changing rules and doing my own things with this game. But I've talked to multiple people and they have assured me that this is a comfortable interpretation of the rules. You cannot initiate a charge to contact unless the target team of said charge to contact is at least 4 inches away from you. Or not at least, four, making it so it's 4 inches away from you. So even if there's an obstacle in your way, if you're 4 inches away from that team that you're targeting, you would just move until you touch the obstacle and then you would be in contact. Right. You're not counting distance to the obstacle. You're measuring the distance between the two teams.
Right. So if there's a 2-inch obstacle between your infantry team and the target team, and you're 2 inches away from that obstacle, yes, you can charge that.
Yeah, because you're not measuring to the obstacle. You're measuring to the target team.
Right.
And so that, unfortunately, is probably how I'm going to have to put my foot down in competitive settings of, this is the rule that we are using for this tournament, which has happened in the past with stuff, because V4 certainly has not been the competitive player's game. It's been definitely more of a, as I've heard it put before, beer and pretzels kind of game, something to knock out on a Friday night, not something to do four rounds at a tournament with. But yeah, this rule was the big one. So the easy way to avoid this, if you're listening and wanting to run your own events or run your own things, or just playing games and you and your opponent are getting confused by this ruling, just measure between the two teams. Mm-hmm. If your two infantry teams are 4 inches apart from each other, you can make the charge no matter the intervening terrain, assuming it's not impassable. You know, if you're 4 inches away and you're 4 inches away linear-wise from a target on top of a cliff, you can't drive a tank into it. You know, you're not going to be able to hit contact. Heck, you wouldn't even be able to move an infantry team up to be able to get into contact. If the only thing preventing you from making contact with that team is non-impassable terrain, so long as you're 4 inches away, you make the charge to contact and you're able to fight. I feel that that is the easiest and most sensible way to interpret these rules. And in my one moment of, you're doing this wrong, turning into a grumpy old gamer, I don't know why Battlefront didn't just make that the base rule. Because
if there's intervening terrain,
literally just, if you're 4 inches away from the target team that you're wanting to assault, you complete the charge to contact unless there's impassable terrain in between the two of you.
Right.
Cut, dry, simple. You know, but I'm not writing this game. I'm just playing it. So that is that.
Indeed. Following that up, does that allow an infantry team that is 4 inches behind another infantry team that is already in contact to charge into contact? Yes, as long as it's 4 inches, as long as its 4 inches move brings it into contact with the enemy, whether directly or by contacting a fellow infantry team, it can charge.
That's a minor clarification. We ran into that in one of our games on Monday, that you just had to basically put two and two together and some rules to make four.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, okay, I thought that you weren't able to double stack, but you're able to double stack.
Right.
And so then that's just the clarification on that bit. On to our next one, though. Ooh, quite a bit of scrolling. Going into counterattack. This is another one of the big ones here, everybody. My tank assaulted two infantry teams, one inside a building and one outside. They destroyed the team that was outside. Have I won the assault since there are no more teams that can be contacted with a 4-inch move since the building is impassable to my tank? Yes, there are no more teams that you can assault, so you have won the assault. So then that immediately pops into part two here of breaking off that Paul will read for us.
Right, so my infantry unit has to break off after being assaulted by a tank. They are all in a building, which is impassable to the tank. So do they have to run out of the building? The answer is no. When breaking off, you must move until you are 6 inches from all assaulting teams. However, if you are in or enter a place where no assaulting teams could reach you with a 6-inch move due to impassable terrain, you do not need to move further away. So if you end up inside of a building after a tank has assaulted you, you only have to move, say, 2 inches away from the tank until you're in the building.
And I'll be all, it's a buff to infantry and a nerf to tanks.
Yeah.
Because previously with how I saw it played and how we were playing it was if you had two teams inside a house and one team on the outside, you would assault the team on the outside, try and break a counterattack, and then the opponents, if they failed, would then have to vacate the house to get 6 inches away. But now it's just making it so that, once again, tanks aren't really able to do... Or tanks aren't the Swiss Army knife that they have been in previous editions. They're right. More... This rule is not one that's, I feel, is going to come up that much, especially when players start getting used to the fact that with the impassable terrain rule for, like, tanks and such, it now is just going to create even more of no-go zones for tanks.
Right.
Like there wasn't already enough of a no-go zone for tanks on the board.
There's just going to be a 4.5-inch bubble around any building that has infantry in it that's just tankless.
All right. That, I believe, covers the basic rules. So let's shift into our special rules here. Paul, taking us away with the British.
So the first one that we come up to is, I have a commando section as a formation support unit. So we have a black box commando section. The commando troop formation has night attack. If I have a formation such as rifle company that can night attack, can this unit move out of the deployment area? Yes, the unit is from a formation with night attack. It can advance with the main night attack formation.
Which makes sense because they both have night attack. Mm-hmm. But that's just a slight rewording for explaining how that's working.
Right.
Now this other bit here is all on mic target. Which I'm not even sure how mic target works.
So the way mic target works, if you successfully range in an artillery unit that has the special rule mic target, you can immediately attempt to range in another artillery unit with that same special rule on that attempt.
Ah, so it gives you a bonus attempt once. So if you successfully range in the first target, mm-hmm. you then get a secondary roll for another attempt of a first target. so long as that other battery has the mic target special rule.
Right. So if my 25-pounder ranges in on the first attempt, I can roll another dice for another 25-pounder to attempt it again on the first attempt.
And it's in, from what this is saying here, with old bits, this isn't new. This is just me learning as we're on the podcast. This is active for every single attempt. You know, so it says, mm-hmm. let's say they fail again and move on to their third attempt. This time they succeed and range in with the second battery, which will suffer a +2 penalty to hit for having ranged in on the spotting team's third attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Mic target triggers again, and they can try and bring in another battery, but it would still count as ranging in on the third attempt, so it would still be at a +2 to hit.
Right.
And then the addition here is the artillery bombardments are then resolved in the order in which they were ranged in, which
right.
is just clarifying keeping house.
Right. And then moving on a little bit further, when I range in additional artillery batteries using the mic target special rule, do they need to use the same aiming points? No, they can use any valid aiming point as long as it's, you know, valid.
Yeah, and then our next bit is kind of what we were talking about earlier, which is, can I use the mic target special rule to range in a unit without that rule, such as a mortar platoon? No, you can only use the mic target rule to range an artillery battery that also has the mic target rule, which makes sense. You right. need mic target to make mic target work.
Which is only really the 25-pounders, the priests, and maybe one other one.
Okay, now on to holding objectives. Can I place an objective partly under a building or a hedge? No, an objective must be placed flat on the table or on a piece of terrain. It cannot be placed under terrain. Again, a quality of life thing that people were saying, it technically isn't in the rules, so it's okay to do this. Because the only thing that was in the rules previously was you cannot place it in impassable terrain where a team can't get to it.
Right. I mean, if you wanted to put an objective under a building, you could just put it next to it and still achieve the same thing. So
if a unit is unable to move at all, since it's a gun that has been converted to a nest via a command card, it cannot move onto table. So putting it in reserve is the equivalent to having it left out of battle, which is an interesting, very minor kind of housekeeping thing where if you don't put it on the table, it's automatically counted as left out of battle. So it does not count as a destroyed unit.
Okay, so if you take, say, pack front, and you decide you don't need that for whatever weird reason, and you put it in your reserves, it just can't move. It doesn't move on.
Yeah. Okay, and so skimming through this next portion, if I miss anything, please comment below to let me know, because we lost our indicators from the writers on the new things, because they have an entire portion, 2 pages, dedicated to building a list. And so the biggest change from it is dealing with support. Allied support being one of them. Often allied forces fight side by side, blah, 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 blah. You can take one compulsory unit other than the HQ unit from an allied formation as an allied support unit, and one entire allied formation as an allied formation. You can only ever be supported by one allied nation. An allied nation, unit, or formation obeys all the rules for its own nationality. It can only benefit from the command leadership of its own formation commander, and its formation commander cannot give command leadership to other support units. If all of your formations are destroyed, if all of your own formations are destroyed, your force will break, even if you still have an active allied formation, since they are support to your force. So this is kind of bringing in something from Team Yankee, where allied formations and allied units are not, they're now classified as support, especially the allied formations. Because mm-hmm. that was a Team Yankee thing, where if you are playing, say, Soviets and Czechs, and Czechs are your support formation, and your Soviet formation breaks, even though the Czechs are a formation, they are purchased as support, so your army breaks and flees.
Right.
But the other big one here is you can only take one. You will only now be able to take one allied platoon as black box and one allied formation, which is the only one that really impacts is Germans.
Right.
You know, so you can't spam multiple, you know, kind of like you can't take King Tiger's drillings in 2 centimeters now as 3 black box choices. You are limited to one. So if you're running, say, something out of Aggression German, you can only pull one allied unit.
From the Bald Sherman book.
From the Bald Sherman book. Or maybe I'm misinterpreting that. Hold on, let me scroll up here. This is a nightmare. You can field one... Formation support represents a higher command reinforcing... You can take any compulsory unit from other formations in your force. You may only have one type of each unit of support if a unit is available in multiple formations. So this one here is a little bit of a change as well. You cannot field two units that differ only in the first part of the name, such as a green M4 Sherman tank platoon and a veteran M4 Sherman tank platoon that have the same equipment, differing only in their ratings. Another example would be the Universal Carrier and the Desert Rats Universal Carrier. That's anti-spam. Some people would figure out ways to fit in an ungodly amount of support-based units.
Right, so they can just so that your opponent can annihilate it and not worry about the formation breaking.
Yes. Formation support represents a higher commander. Take any compulsory unit from other formations in your force. So what is your force? Okay. So, yes, I was correct on this interpretation. Because as I was telling you, the Bald Sherman stuff, Germans taking Germans. That's not allies. Allies is Finns, Hungarians, yada, yada, yada. But we now have formation support. You can take any compulsory units other than HQ units from other formations in, keyword, your force. When you're making a list now, you pick a force diagram. Your chosen force diagram determines the support options that you have available. The force diagrams are what is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pick Bagration German, your formation support black box units can only come from Bagration German now.
Interesting. Okay. So you can't take, say, a Hungarian Zrinyi assault gun platoon?
No, you can, because that's under allies.
Okay.
That's under allies. This is for German list-building shenanigans that was happening. You know, being able to put King Tigers in, say, for example, 1/16th.
Okay, gotcha.
So what happens now is, walking it through, you first pick your points limit. So, Paul, you and I pick our 105, 110-point limit. We then pick a force diagram. Once you have agreed a points total, you pick a force diagram from a book. Your chosen force diagram determines the support options that you have available. So I would say, for example, pick a Bulge Americans.
Okay.
And then you would pick D-Day British, because that's usually where you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to pick our formations. So the most common place to take formations from is the same book as your force diagram. They will usually produce a historically themed force. You may also take formations from other books for the same nationality as your time period. This allows you to create less common forces without having every book duplicate all the formations found in other books, or try out what-if combinations. Some command cards create new varieties of formations. You can only use these formations with the force diagram from the same book as the command card. So that is an important addition. I can no longer take a D-Day American force and play an Chaffee Rec-A company card. I would have to take Bulge American to get access to that.
Okay.
Your formations found only on command cards can only be taken if that book is your selected force.
Right. So, say, the D-Day Germans will take 1/16th again. You can't take that. You could not take that in a Bagration book previously?
Yes, you could, but that isn't what this is talking about.
Okay.
We're talking about command card formations, not upgrades, not modifications, literal command card, like the Puma Scout Company.
Gotcha.
That is a command card formation. The Domelier Rec-A Company, or whatever it's called. Those cards. Doesn't matter that much for you, British, because you just got the one book. But for Germans, being able to pull from D-Day German, D-Day Waffen, Bagration German, and now Bulge German... like I said, this is me taking Bulge German, but not, or sorry, better example, because Bulge German, for its command cards, it has the Volkshetzer company, you know, where you're able to take a whole bunch of really cheap Hetzers. I can only take that if my selected force diagram is Bulge German. So I cannot take that formation in a D-Day German formation. Or D-Day German force, because it's a command card formation.
Okay.
I have to have I have to select, in order to get access to the formations in the command card deck, you have to have that book selected as your force.
Okay.
That's selected as your support diagram.
Okay.
And so then... other formations in your force. Yes, so... off I said earlier, you can take any compulsory units other than HQ from other formations in your force. So, your force being your force diagram. So, I will have to double check with some of the other community organizers and tournament players on what their opinion of that is, because to my reading in this discussion that we've been having on it, I don't think you can take black box support from other books now. That might not be the case, but that's how I'm reading it. You can only take compulsory units other than HQ from other formations in your force. What is your force? You pick a force diagram. That's your force.
And you pick that from the book.
You pick that from, well, a book. You pick the book.
Right.
You know, the only reason why they're saying that right now is because Mid-War is having the compilation books coming out. And there's probably going to be compilation books coming out for Late War. For nationalities. Okay. So that's probably something in the future. But neither here nor there right now. But so that's my interpretation of that, is saying that you can only take compulsory units from other formations in your force. That is black box units. So being able to take a black box platoon as a formation support option.
Okay.
And so I can see, because then the problem with that is from other formations that aren't in your force. You have the pick formation selection. Your force contains at least one formation, but you can field as many as your points allow. You can take formations from three sources. Same book, a different book, or formations from command cards. Same book, different book, don't matter. Command cards, you have to have that book selected as your force.
Right.
But I think because of that, that's making it so that your black box is only from other formations in your force.
So then if I was to take a D-Day British formation and try to take a Fortress Europe Italian Churchill unit.
You cannot. That's my interpretation. Allowed. That's my interpretation of this, which might be wrong. I mean, granted, I'm glad because that stops a lot of the really, really crazy list building stuff that was happening. But that will have to be an additional ruling. I'll have to post that in Facebook and see what other people say on that, because it seems like, I mean, I'm going to read it again for you guys so you can hear it. You can take any compulsory units other than HQ unit from other formations in your force. You may only have one type of each unit as formation support, and only if you don't have it in one of your formations or as support. And your force is, you pick a force diagram from a book. So I think that's what it's saying with the you select a force. Because right after picking a force diagram, you go right into formations. So I think the only way to get other book stuff into your list now is to include the entire formation.
That's interesting.
For Germans at least, because Germans have the most books. That's what 90% of these rulings are going to be going towards, guys, is the Germans. Because you got four books, soon to be five.
My British are sitting on one book.
Yeah, Americans have two, Soviets have one, well, six total for Germans, once you count Fortress Europe and the Berlin book. But that's the main thing that they're hitting with these, because with that many book options, you are able to really pull some really janky stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that is the case, though, because that has been a very common complaint of the community, of having people doing really, really wonky layered stuff like that. But I will definitely have to do something about that. Let me actually make a quick note here so that I remember to ask. Formation support question. Put that right up on my little counter here. All right, so that wild card, some units and books are wild cards. This allows them to be used in the wild card slot on your force diagram. You may only include up to one of the wild cards available from your nationality from the book you're fielding your force from. That, I think, is them hinting that late war monsters is going to be coming.
Yeah,
because they've already they haven't confirmed, but they've said that they've been working on models with them, which in my eyes is a complete confirm.
Right. So there might be a little extra tag at the end of one of them, and it's like wild card on the one of the other units.
Yes. So they added 3.5 pages on command cards. So, seeing as we're already approaching 40 minutes, I'm not going to read through this entire bit. I'm going to hit the points that I remember. If I miss any, please comment down below or let me know. And hit me with the bonk bat. The biggest thing here is... Okay, guys, so the big change here is you can only use command cards from the same book as your force diagram. You can no longer put 1/16th in a Bagration book.
Even if you take
them as that formation.
Okay.
You have to keep the cards to the book. You can only use command cards from the same book as your force diagram. The only exception to that is if the card specifically states it. The big exception to the requirement that cards be used only with their own book are cards that specifically refer to another book. An example of this would be the Crocodile Support card in D-Day British. Despite coming from that card pack, it is a D-Day American card as shown by the card back and can only be used with the D-Day American force diagram. A different example is the M4 Sherman Tanks card from Bulge Americans. This card takes the characteristics from a unit card of D-Day Americans and applies them to a Bulge American unit. The resulting unit is a Bulge American unit. A final example would be the Romanian Allies cards from Bagration Axis Allies. These cards allow German or Soviet forces that would otherwise not be able to take Romanian allies to do so. So unless it is specifically stated, guys, I will say that again, unless it is specifically stated on the card, your cards are now locked with your book selection.
All right. Hooray.
That's going to help mid-war. That's going to help mid-war more than late war. But, oh man, that is something that is... That was the big one that I found when I was reading through this, is that you're now just locked, which is good. That's going to be preventing a lot of the jank.
Right. And again, it's mostly going to be against Germans, but Americans have it a little bit, yeah. The Soviets.
Yeah, you're able to kind of pull stuff, yeah. There's some command cards in the Bulge American pack that specifically reference that it's a D-Day unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's legal, because again...
It's
unless it specifies on the card, you can only use cards from the book that you selected, which is the book that you pulled your force from.
Right.
So, we now have our late war balancing updates per the books. So, the Americans doing a very quick read through. The only one that really massively changed is Patton. He's no longer a force card, he is a formation card. Only units from that formation and support units can gain the rally or remount on a 2+.
Right.
So he used to be a force, where it was everything. Everything in your list benefited from it.
Right. So now he's attached to your infantry formation or your tank formation and their supporting units.
Yep. So... functionally, he's the exact same as Dietrich von Socken now.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything else is really just slight cleanup. You know, the first Division Blindée, the Zouaves Porte card only applies to infantry units in the formation. Second Infantry Division Indian Head. This does not change the points, values, ratings of a veteran M4 Sherman laid assault gun. Damned Engineers is now listed as a limited card, so that you can only take one.
Mm-hmm.
The M36B1 Tank Destroyer Platoon is not an upgrade card. Same with the Tank Destroyer Hypervelocity. It is not an upgrade card. Same with the Tank Telephones. This is not an upgrade card. The important thing with those three parts is you are capped at one upgrade card per unit. So they had to change those, otherwise you would only be able to take two tanks with a hypervelocity AP. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so really, really quick, guys, for the M4 Shermans, there's a card in Bulge American that allows you to downgrade. And the issue that was happening was, on the command card, the product code given for the command card that it was replacing was the Veteran Shermans from D-Day American. And the problem was they used the same code for the non-veteran versions.
Ooh.
So what would happen is you'd pay -1 point and upgrade all your stats to vet.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So they just made it so that now the stats match, basically. Nothing really in D-Day American. Nothing really in D-Day British.
But then you go to Bulge German.
Bulge German's got a lot of cleanup and housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Grill, late 15-centimeter platoon. Got Third Reich, last stand 3+. The reconnaissance late platoon, that is important. That was a massive typo. The infantry platoon had the scout rule.
Ooh.
Yeah. The 5-centimeter Waffen scout troop for the Puma, the range was incorrect. This one I'm really excited for because I was embarrassingly mad at them for this. The card for the Flampanzer Hetzer had a machine gun on it. The literal image of the tank on the card had a machine gun, but there was no machine gun stat line.
Ah.
Add Hetzer MG weapon with range 16 inches, halted rate of fire 2, moving rate of fire 2, anti-tank 2, firepower 6. It's a downgrade. It is not 3-3, it's a 2-2. But I was just like, how can you put an image of a tank with an MG clearly on it? It's not even like obscured or anything. It is very blatantly obvious that it's an MG on that little tank, but no, it doesn't have an MG.
I'm pretty sure they didn't even use a new image for it. They just copy-pasted it from the
It's a different paint scheme, and it's the proper barrel, because the Flam Hetzer, the 76 millimeter is removed, and so it's a chunkier barrel. A different barrel. Yeah. Looks like mostly everything else is housekeeping for further explanation. 106 Panzer Brigade, Feldherrn, blah, 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 blah. All transports in the attachment are upgraded at no costs. However, their mounted assault ratings do not change. Panzer Grenade, Courageous Tanks, self-propelled guns still have the worst counterattack. The Volksgrenadier, veteran Volksgrenadier, the HQ is upgraded at no cost, which was heavily hinted, and it does not apply to the SMG 42 machine gun and 8-centimeter mortar platoons. I was very confused by that, but then I remembered that there's an entirely separate card that you have to take with it that upgrades those.
Mm-hmm.
The 105th Panzer Brigade, 150 Panzer Brigade, which is Skorsani's Commandos. It's a limited card, so you can only take one of them. The 512 Schwerpanzerjäger Abteilung.
Abteilung.
Second company does not apply to Panzer IV Stug tank platoons. The looted M8 armored cars is a limited card. Some slight housekeeping on Hans-Peter Nast. Basically emphasizing that if you range in with him, it's going to be a 3+. Further things on Joachim Pieper. Specifying what was written on the card, but in more words. The Reconnaissance Kampfgruppe is now a limited card. The 150 Panzer Brigade, a little bit of housekeeping. And now these last two parts that I was waiting for, because that was abusive as heck. The Volks 75 and Volks 88 do not gain brutal, slow firing, smoke, or smoke bombardment rules. The 75 being not on a crux form has forward firing rule for both artillery and direct fire. Volks 88 is on the crux form, so it has 360 degree fire.
Yep.
So they added that in and changed that, which was something that was really obnoxious to deal with in terms of a rules as written.
They suddenly became very high priority for me whenever I would play against you with the Bulge Germans. So they had to go.
Yeah,
otherwise, the infantry would suffer too much.
Yeah, I mean, and overall, for Bulge German, I'm not upset. the nerfs, quote unquote, I was expecting. You know, I knew that they wouldn't keep 88 and 75 because I think Phil even mentioned that was not the case. But rules as written, that's how it's working right now. So I was like, okay, that's how that's going to run until they get this taken care of. The one I'm happy about is my flameheadses get their MGs.
I don't know
if I'm ever going to use it, but that was just like straight up an ego thing. Like, how the hell can you print a card with a tank that has an MG on it, clearly on it, but not have it in the stat? Anyway, neither here nor there. I'm wasting time. Onto the other big changes.
Looks like the next one is Bagration.
Yep.
German.
Von Sacken. Specified now, just like with Patton. He's a formation card. Only units from that formation and support units gain the tactics on a 2+. That was always something that was argued.
Yep.
Some cards had title added to it so that you can only take one of them. But now one of the two big balancing changes. Pack front now costs 2 points per gun team, not 6 points per unit.
Whoa. Now that's in Bagration German.
And D-Day German. Every single one of the books. Too. Yep. Every single one of the books has that in it for pack front. Now, hear me out. That does not solve the problem of pack front. 2 points more for the unit is what it's going to cost. You have 4 guns. It's going to cost 8 points instead of 6.
Right.
You've listened to Danny and I bitch enough, pardon my French, ladies and gentlemen, about pack front. Do you remember what we said the number one problem with pack front was?
Not off the top of my head, no.
They are independent teams for alternating deployment.
So you deploy each
one individually. So when I'm playing against, say, for example, you're British, we roll up a mission with meeting engagement, or not necessarily meeting engagement, but one of the attack, maneuver, defend missions where we alternate deployment.
Mm-hmm.
Each of my pack fronts goes down individually. So you put down an infantry platoon, I put down 188. You put down your Crocs, I put down 188. You put down your M10s, I put down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
That, in my opinion, is the problem with pack front.
Where you can suddenly counter your opponent just because you have 4 independent teams that have to go down.
Yeah, it basically turns those alternating games into the other player deploys first, the German player deploys second.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have tailored your list to deal with that, and you have a lot of small units that you can string out, like the British Cavalier Company.
Right.
You know, if you have enough of those recce things, it's like, go ahead, I got 6 of these to deploy, so we can just go back and forth. But that's the main thing. You know, and 2 points per gun team rather than 6 points for the unit, I don't know if 8 points is going to be enough to knock it down. To make people not want to take it.
No.
That's very minor, but on contrast, the thing that will make pack front not be taken, I don't think is this points. I think it's going to be a meta shift.
Yeah, I feel like the meta shift is going to be bigger only because they're going to be trying to squeeze in the King Tigers.
King Tigers, Brigade Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the AT-14 isn't exactly what it is anymore.
No.
You know, and I feel like most German lists are going to run the 2 King Tigers, which is just like they just laugh at pack front.
Yeah.
They just, you just make sure you're never showing side to them and they can't touch you. And you just never assault them so that they don't get a side shot.
Yep.
You assault them with infantry. So I think that's going to be what kills pack front. I don't think this is going to do anything to it because, like I said, the main offender is the fact that you deploy each team individually as an independent team.
Right.
And on to our next big one. 116th Panzer Division Greyhound. Good old Greyhound. Mm-hmm. All units in the formation lose their Reich, have a last stand rating of 5+ and a tactics rating of 4+ for, what's that say, Paul?
It is -1 point per unit now.
Ooh, they're having to pay 6 to 10 points more, which doesn't sound like that much, but actually is a pretty fair amount for it.
Yes.
Cuts that discount in half.
Especially since those 6 points, I believe it is 6 of your 7 5-guns. I think you were calling them Stummels?
It's 8 or 9 points for them, for the Stummels. Now, the big thing that does is that makes for Greyhound. That takes away free units roughly, when you're doing the math, and makes it so that if you take Greyhound, they get free free Panzerfausts.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't get Panzerfausts in D-Day Germany. You have to pay 2 points to upgrade them. It's not like Bagration where just flat comes with it.
Right.
So basically, you take 6 units, your command and your 2 Panzer platoons get free Panzerfausts, which is basically what the Bagration book was doing when you downgraded them with stuff anyway.
Right.
So that's been needed for
so long.
An ungodly amount of time. D-Day Waffen. Again, cleaning house with their best infantry and best firepower, showing how the upgrades work with the half tracks in the unit. Pack front getting increased by 2 per gun. Bagration Soviet. Guards rifles, guards tanks, hero naval infantry battalion, and naval infantry battalion are now listed as title cards and cannot be used with any other title card. So that's kind of big, but kind of not. I didn't really see that many people layering those together, but you can no longer take a guard's rifle, guard's tanks. It's one or the other.
Hmm.
Partisan band. Local knowledge allows the unit's infantry teams to move across country, dash speed through all terrain, apart from impassable terrain. So that's just housekeeping. That's really what that is. It's specifying things that weren't already said. Now, Bagration Axis Allies. Looks like we got a bunch of titles added. So I think that's actually the most common thing that they did through with the command cards now, is made a fair amount of them titles so that you can't cross-spam parts.
Yeah, that's what it looks like to me, too.
Yeah, the armored car platoon for the Hungarians, it looks like their speed got adjusted. I'm not familiar with Hungarians, so I don't know if that's correcting a misprint or a balancing effort, but those have changed. So if you play the Saba armored car platoon, be sure to check that out. Tactical speed is now 10 inches, terrain dash is 10 inches, cross country dash is 16, and road dash is that whopping wheeled 40. So once again, title, Romania and the 100mm artillery battery got smoke. The artillery bombardment has smoke bombardment, and direct fire has the smoke rule. Title. So Guards Divisions. This has the title Guard Division. This is Romania. Rifle formations in this platoon cost -1 point each compared to motorized rifle platoons. Other units cost +1 point each compared to the equivalent unit in a rifle company. All units with this title have a motivation rating of 3+, including Last Stand. Green 5+, with assault 4+, or 5+ if guns are heavy weapons, and are cautious 4. All gun and heavy weapon teams in the formations have assault 5. This just made Romanian infantry even that much better. This was kind of how they were being played previously. You pair them up with Soviets to give Soviets a good infantry unit that could smoke and that was cautious and could actually kind of do stuff. So this just layers that in for sure now. And it looks like everything else has titles, and then again, clarity being added to it. And then I won't go into the mid-war updates because we haven't started really playing mid-war yet. We're looking at getting into it.
Yep, there's a pre-release going on with that mid-war stuff going on. I think it is just titled Eastern Front.
Yeah, it's the compilation book where they're bringing everything together and bringing up a bunch of mid-war monsters. But that's Lessons from the Front. August 2022, guys. Oh, man, that was a lot. And look at that, we just hit an hour. So, I'm going to call that a mission success, guys. Thank you for listening to the maneuver meta. Remember to keep your opponent on their toes by always throwing that maneuver out. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Let me know what you guys think. As always, I'd love hearing back from you guys so that I can keep doing this and making it better for you, because that's why I'm doing this. So I'm able to provide these resources and just this content for this community that I love so much. So feel free to follow me on social media. I'll have all the links down below if you're on YouTube. Spotify, I'm pretty sure that I'll be able to have a link set up in there for my link tree that will take me to all my other social medias. If you want to support Paul and I so that we can continue doing this, and maybe even be able to do it more regularly, please take a look at the Patreon, because every little bit helps so that we're able to keep doing this, and hopefully one day we'll be able to do this at a rate at which that will make it so that we can have, man, I'd be okay doing this every single week. Yeah, you know, going through a bit, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, unfortunately, it's that situation with life, man, you know?
It just happens, man.
Yeah. So, hopefully we'll be able to, not have as long of a break between our next episode and now. But I literally managed to wrangle Paul to be like, hey, we're needing to record an episode tonight so I can quick throw this together. I got my Patreon exclusive battle report literally uploading now in the background as we were recording this for my patrons.
Just a little bit more incentive to go take out that Patreon there.
Yeah, it's got the sneak preview of potentially what I'm going to be running at, probably what I am running at Battle Alley for the Battle Badgers event that we're going to at the end of August. So If you guys want a little sneak peek, be sure to check out that Patreon. It'll get you the link to that video. If you're just wanting to be surprised, well, then be sure to head out to Franklin. Check out the Battle Badgers on Facebook. They got a nice event coming up here at the end of August. Nice little light war tournament going on. 110 points. If I remember correctly, it's happening at like a bowling alley or something.
That's why it's called Battle Alley, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, I think that's the case, but yeah.
I saw that and was like, heh, that's clever.
Yeah. A bunch of the guys came down for a Team Yankee tournament that I hosted, and while there were some issues with it, we got most of it resolved, and I know for myself, I'm very excited to be able to play against them. You played with them for the Team Yankee tournament. I ran it. I'm excited to be able to be playing in an event. I haven't played in an event for
a long time.
God, yeah. I've only been able to play like four or five. No, I've played three games. Five games. Four. Five?
The last tournament you played, I believe, was Adepticon.
Yeah. And then just pickup games and such. It's really been since the Escalation League was running, and I didn't even play. I played in the second stage of the Escalation League, so not even halfway through. So it's been a hot minute. We've had some games going here and there, but we've both just been so busy. So yeah, if you guys want to support us, help us out so that we can keep doing this some more. God, I'm awful at this kind of thing. But please, please, take a moment to look at our Patreon. Lowest tier is a dollar. You get access to the Discord server and a patron-only portion of the Discord server as well. So please be sure to check that out. You guys are amazing. Much love, as always. Looking forward to continuing doing this. And I'll catch you guys later.
Same thing.